You're listening to the King of the Four podcast, offering in-depth analysis on all things Boston Celtics with your hosts, Jim and Mike Quigley.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another edition. It's been a while, first of all. So hello, of King of the Fourth Quarter podcast. It's I'm Jim Quigley. As always, I'm with my brother, Michael. And we are less than a month away before the Celtics tip off the regular season.
And thank God.
Thank God. And there is absolutely a ton that has happened, both in terms of minor Celtics signings and then a blockbuster trade between the Bucks and the Portland Trailblazers that directly impact, you know, the Celtics' chances of completing the goal this season, which would be to win the NBA championship. So, Mike, you tell me where you want to start. Do you want to start with the signing of Sweeve Mihajluk and Lamar Stevens and some two-way guy that I never heard of? Or do you want to dive right into the blockbuster of the trade?
Well, we got to start with what really impacts the Celtics here. It's not the end of the bench. Milwaukee got a lot better. And the Eastern Conference is got a lot of good teams. It's going to be really interesting, but it's Boston and Milwaukee, right? And I felt like it was going to lean that way even before this trade. And now afterwards, Vegas has Milwaukee as the favorites, which I don't really agree with because, as we were talking about before the pod, they still don't have the wings really to cover Tatum and Brown. But what Milwaukee does have, I think they're going to be very efficient in offense with this trade. Obviously, that's quite a duo with Giannis and Damian Lillard going forward, and it's not over yet. There's more that's going to come with this trade. They're already talking about moving Drew Holiday, and the Celtics are part of those conversations. So it's a really interesting time because I think the Celtics have the chips to make a move here if they want to. It sounds like they're in it. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on what you would give up for a play like Holiday and how this trade with Damian Lillard impacts the Eastern Conference moving forward and the NBA moving forward. Do you think the Bucks are the favorites or do you think it's still the Celtics? In my mind, Jim, I don't know if I'm a homer, but I just still think the Celtics are deeper and better. But if you look at who has the best players at the top, I think it could swing either way between Giannis and Tatum and between Brown and Lillard. I would lean that Lillard's a better player right now than Jaylen Brown, but I also could argue that I think Tatum is better than Giannis. But Giannis has done it. This is exciting stuff. I can't wait to watch these two teams play, and I can't wait for April and May when the NBA playoffs start.
Yeah, so we are, this trade, it kind of reminds me of the Kyrie trade in, just in terms of timing when the Celtics picked him up. We are like, next week training camp opens for the Celtics. They tip off their first preseason game next Sunday, believe it or not, against the Sixers. Yeah. And, they open the season on October 25th. So, and I think the Bucks maybe opened the season the day before against the Sixers or the day after or the same day, whatever. But you're knocking on the door of the regular season, and it's a great trade for the Bucks. There's no doubt about it. I think one of the issues they've had at the end of games is they haven't had guys that can finish games. Middleton gave you that a little bit a couple of years ago. Holiday played out of his mind at times in the playoffs when they went to the finals and helped with that. But they really haven't had a guy that, you look at in the fourth quarter as a killer. And Dame Lillard is certainly that. They also, it kind of changes the way you defend them, right? For the Celtics for the past 4 or 5 years, you kind of build a wall against Giannis. You didn't so much worry about even a Holiday beating you, as good as he is and what he's capable of, but you kind of live with that. You can't do that as much. If you play off Lillard to any extent, he's going to kill you. Once he gets hot, there's very few guys, maybe Steph Curry, in the league, and that's it, that just become unconscious like he does. He's a scary addition. Now, that doesn't mean that the trade doesn't come without risk. He's in his 30s.
The risk of energy and injury, and he's a risk on defense.
Yeah, so absolutely, you know, he's a smaller guy that, you know, is in his 30s, 33 years old, right? So he's headed into his mid-30s. His contract is enormous. And he's signed through the next 3-4 years, you know, plus $50 million. If he, you know, starts to decline, and there was no sign of that last year, so let's be clear. He was one of the best 5 players in the league last year, hands down, offensively, without a doubt. But, you know, taking on a point guard at this age with that type of salary is a huge risk. It usually, typically, in NBA history, this is when you start to see the decline. And typically, that decline can be pretty rapid. So whether it's because of injuries or just wear and tear because you're a smaller guy, you know, so I think for the Bucks, this season here, this isn't...
This is the one. They want to win now.
This is the one. And they were in the tough spot now that their roster has really been cut down quite a bit. You know, with the guys they saw going out with Holiday and Grayson Allen and things like that. They got to fill holes on that roster right now. They don't have much in terms of wing depth or starters at all. Behind, you have Chris Middleton, who, you know, they re-upped in the offseason because I think they had to, but I don't think he's worth the $30 million, whatever he signed for there. He really showed some rapid decline, and then they don't really have anything at all after that. Jay Crowder looked like a shell of himself.
Is he still there?
On the floor, yeah, he's still there. Went on the floor last year. Pat Connaughton is a nice role player, but he offers no resistance on the defensive end against bigger wings, which you know, has really been the Bucks' kryptonite over the last few seasons. Two things have been their kryptonite. One, they didn't have a finisher, I thought, and that's been resolved. That's been resolved. Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, if you look at Tatum and Brown, they haven't had anyone to deal with those guys, and they still don't. In fact, they got worse in that regard.
Yeah.
So,
and that's why I don't think the Bucks are done. I think that they're going to be trying to move that Bobby Portis contract to bring in some wings.
Yeah, the risk with that, though, and he's probably the only contract, and, you know, maybe they try to move Connaughton, but you're going to – wings are high-valued, even mediocre ones. So you got to give up a lot to get anything in terms of wings. And I guess Bobby Portis is all they have left. They don't really have any picks. They're going to – they may not want to be done. But I don't know how they do it, Mike. We've sat here for the last 3 seasons and talked about how the Celtics have needed a backup wing, and it's just almost impossible to get.
Yeah, but if I'm a contending team and I have a wing that's not starting and I can get a Bobby Portis, I'm making that move. If I'm already, you know, good in that position,
But where does that exist? Where is in a contending team that you can think of says we have expendable wings?
I'm thinking it would be the LA Clippers, where they have Nicholas Batum, they have Morris, and they have the guy they got from Toronto who played for the Blazers too, Norman Powell. I think Bobby Portis makes more sense for the Clippers than like another wing.
Maybe Morris. They're not going to trade Powell for Portis. They can get more than Portis for Powell. Maybe Morris or Batum. I don't, you know, Morris might offer some resistance, but, you know, he wasn't a very good defensive player last year, and that has a lot to do with his age now. So they could make that move. But they would, I think, as a basketball team, you could argue the Bucks would get worse because they'd be giving up more talent
to
just fill a position. And so from that perspective, they're in a tough spot, but they're better off today. There's no doubt about it. They're better off today, and Every sports book has them as the odds on favorite, which is reasonable, I think. And the Celtics, you know, on the flip side, we talked about how tough it is for the Bucks to cover what the Celtics have offensively. The Celtics, I don't even think, are as equipped as they have been in past years to deal with
Giannis. Not at all.
You know, so when you start talking about minusing Grant Williams and Marcus Smart, building a wall becomes a little bit tougher. You know, Horford's obviously had some really good success. Rob Williams has caused problems at the rim for Giannis. And the Celtics wings do take on that job of, you know, covering him pretty well. Jaylen Brown has had some decent success, but it's not the same. So, you know, not only did Milwaukee get better offensively, the Celtics kind of got a little worse defensively to match with there too, which is interesting. You could have these two teams play and we could be seeing scores in the 120s, 130s pretty easily.
Yeah, and I think for Milwaukee, the role of Brook Lopez, which he was dynamic last year and helping that team just be elite defensively, I mean, it's even bigger now. He has to play at the same level on defense again this year for them to be successful and for them to win an NBA championship, because guys like Lillard and Connaughton, they are going to get beat to the basket. Mm-hmm. And I think the philosophy in Milwaukee has always been that a guy like Lopez, and they signed his brother too, they're going all in with this, is we're going to take away the paint. And I think that's a question mark only because he's older too. Okay. He played a ton of minutes last year, and they leaned on him a lot. And I think that's why they fortified the center position so they could play him less in the regular season. But I think his role is huge for the success of that team. Is he able to play at that level defensively again? I don't know, Jim.
I don't know.
He was great last year.
He was great. He was really, really good. And I actually thought they were going to lose him. And kudos to the ownership there to ensure that he came back. It's also been one of those things where he hasn't been effective against the Celtics because of the way the Celtics play and the way they spread you out. And in that regard, you know, the Celtics got better, you know, with the addition of Kristaps Porzingis. You know, it's not just the 37-year-old Al Horford who's going to be out there, and you hope his legs, you know, don't leave him. You have a 27-year-old.
Well, you also hope Porzingis is healthy too.
Yeah. Well, of course.
Yeah.
I think both teams, the kryptonite would be health, right?
Yes.
You have issues with Middleton, Lopez, and you worry about a 33-year-old, will be 34. Dame Lillard, and then for the Celtics, it's, you know, Brogdon, Rob Williams, Horford, Porzingis, you worry about, you know, their health. I will say, just on the Celtics side, the top two players, you don't really worry about their health at all.
No, Tatum and Brown. Although unfortunately, the last two postseasons, Tatum was hurt in both of them. Game 7 against Miami and then Golden State, he was obviously not himself.
But it was a fluke injury, turning an ankle, that can happen to any guy at any time. You don't worry about that as a structural thing for Jason Tatum that's going to bother him, you know, throughout the season or anything like that.
And to give Stevens credit, too, as we plan for Tatum and Brown's longevity for the playoff run, I do think that Stevens did we'll see if it's a good job, but I think he was pretty intentional about building out that position on his roster this year. I can count three new guys on the active roster who play the wing position, and with Sam Hauser, it gives Mazzulla some options to rest these guys. And, you know, I know we want to talk about the roster, and obviously that's important, Jim, but I want to hear what you think about Drew Holiday being available, because I think the option is on the table to have the guy who can cover Damian Lillard on your team now.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I know we can fill it in a way with Derek White, but there's a better option out there. And one thing I like about the idea of trading for a guy like this too, is we saw moments in the playoffs, especially in the fourth quarter against Atlanta, Philadelphia, and obviously against Miami, where the Celtics fell apart offensively. And part of that is because Jason Tatum didn't do a good job, and he needs to be better. But the other part of it is a guy like Holiday in the fourth quarter would really help the Celtics. And I, on both ends. And I don't know if there's a better on-ball defender in the NBA. I think Marcus Smart's a better overall defender. But on the ball, I don't know if there's a better one that I can think of right now. Personally, I'd be willing to give up a lot. I think if he's your starting point guard right now, you're winning the NBA championship. I don't think it's a question. But I'd love to hear what you think.
Well, you know, I love Jrue Holiday. He's done it. He's a tough player. I think you're probably right that he might be the best on-ball defender in the league. But before I get to him, I just want, and this has been aggravating me a little bit. People have gotten, you know, since Holiday's name has popped up, people have been pretty dismissive, either directly or indirectly, of how good Derek White is. Derek White, you know, 4 years younger, was an All-NBA defensive player. You know, maybe not the best on-ball defender, but, you know, at the rim, the way he recovers, the things he does for your team are so extraordinarily valuable. He was the Celtics' best guard. And I don't think it was close. And it wasn't like he was playing with chumps. He had Brogdon and Smart, and he was the best out of the three of them. And I thought, you know, he didn't even get the opportunities he deserved last season to even be better than what he showed. He makes big plays, as, you know, seen in game 6 in Miami, to, you know, have the heads up ability to crash the rim and tip it in and send it to a game 7. I think he's a really good player. And one of the things, you know, as much as I love Marcus Smart, that I was excited about and am excited about going into the season, is that minutes are going to open up for him in ways they haven't before. I still think that's one of Brad Stevens' best moves as a general manager in bringing him in. And I don't know why talking heads, in particular around here, kind of poo-poo him as Celtics fans overrating him. If anything, I think he's being underrated. I think he's a really solid, solid player. I thought he was their third best player easily last year. And, you know, and we'll see what we get with Porzingis, but he's right there again. And so, that said, I don't think you would have to include him in a deal.
I don't think you do either.
Holiday. I think you could make a move. I think what Portland wants is picks.
More than anything else.
If you send a Malcolm Brogdon, which you would have to include in a deal, they're just going to look to move him to a place like the Clippers anyway to acquire more picks. So I think you would have a three-team deal. If you acquired Jrue Holiday with Malcolm Brogdon going anywhere but Portland.
I think you'd have to thin yourself out at the big, though, to make contracts work. So either Horford or Rob would have
unless
to
you do a three-team. Unless you do a three-team and picks are included. Mm-hmm. I think Sam Hauser would definitely be gone. I think that would be a player, you know, he's not a key piece of the trade, but I think Portland would see him with the young gods as a good piece to add on to what they have.
Pritchard, too.
Pritchard. The bigger obstacle for the Celtics. So you bring Jrue Holiday on. He's making $34 million, and he's got a player option next year. Mm-hmm. So would this be a move just for this season?
That's not my checkbook.
Two more years on his contract. If you resign Holiday, that means you're probably trading Derek White next offseason, saying goodbye to him. Again, for a 34-year-old guy, you're going to pay for multiple years of over $30 million. I don't know if that's good business.
It's good business if they win the championship.
Well, maybe it's just a rental.
Which they haven't been able to do.
Maybe it's just a rental. Maybe it's just for this season. I think that's a bigger decision. You have money locked up pretty extensively with three guys right now, with Tatum, Brown, and Porzingis. you were not going to spend on both White and Holiday going forward. I think the smarter play is to pay White. He's younger and he's going to be cheaper. And I think he will be better as their contracts go on. So that's where they have to make the decision. If it's me, I'm rolling the dice and I'm going for this 1 year. And I'm trying to win the title. I think you mentioned how motivated he would be if he was in Boston. Could you imagine him playing Milwaukee?
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the other part of it too, and this is the other part I think you do have to consider and think about, is what if he does get moved? And I know that they didn't like Miami's offer for Lillard, but when you think about how much you've struggled against Miami,
sure.
And now you have Holiday and Butler in the backcourt together defensively, and you have
I don't think that's a team you have to worry about acquiring Holiday. I think they're going to want him. But I'd be more concerned about the Sixers swinging a 3T deal to get Harden to the Clippers and a bunch of picks going to Portland and Holiday going to
Philly. Yeah, like, I guess he doesn't concern me as much on Philly because I feel like Philly will just be Philly.
Yeah.
But Miami's the team that always concerns me.
But a Holiday backcourt is a lot better than a Harden Maxi backcourt.
It sure is. And they took you to game seven.
They would be good. Miami doesn't have many picks. I guess they can dangle Tyler Hero. I'm not sure anyone wants fucking Tyler Hero. I think Miami's been better in the playoffs without him. 2 years ago in the Eastern Conference Finals, the Celtics were targeting him with Peyton Pritchard with success. That's how bad he is defensively. So if you're the Clippers, do you really want to roll with Tyler Hero in the playoffs? I think probably not. So I think anyone can really trump what Miami has to offer. And if you look at the Celtics, just off the bat in terms of draft picks, in 2024, they have 2 firsts and 3 seconds. They have their 2025. They have their 2026. They have their 2027. They have, for a team that's in the position they're in, they got a shit ton of picks.
That's so, why I think he's coming here. I think it's happening.
If they want to do it, they can. But it has risk because, what you do going forward. But maybe you just do the 1 year, Mike. Maybe that's all it is. And you kind of solve the cash problem for next year a little bit because Brogdon will be off the books, Holiday will leave in free agency, and you still have a really good core of Porzingis, White, Brown, and Tatum, right?
Yeah, well, that would be up to Holiday because he could always sign his player option.
Well, I think he'd want this would be that would be a bad risk for him, I think,
to go
into free agency the following year, 35 years old, looking for a long-term deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he could.
Yeah, so he could. I mean, and that's the way I look at it, Jim. It's let's get Tatum and Brown over the hump. That's what I look at it, and I think bringing this guy in, and if you're able to keep Derek White, and then you have White and Holiday in the backcourt together, you're talking about that defensive identity coming back, man. Like that they didn't have last year.
Yeah,
and. Even with Smart, they didn't have it last year. Something was just off. Something wasn't right. And this is somebody new who hasn't been here. He's not part of this culture. He's bringing something different to the locker room. He's done it. He played at a high level in the NBA Finals. He's feared around the league by other teams. Like, you can kind of see it now with the amount of teams that are interested in trading for him. It's because they don't want to fucking play against him. Like, the Celtics don't want to play against Drew Holiday.
He's been an all-star, all-NBA defensive player. Yeah, no, like, I don't know. I don't think anyone doesn't like Jrue Holiday. he's a stand-up guy from, you think anyways. You don't know any of these guys. But, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I would not, and I don't think they have to, but I would absolutely not include Derek White on any deal.
I think a dark horse team to pay attention to is the Golden State Warriors saying, yeah, we're moving fucking Chris Paul again, and we're giving you our young players and draft picks, and we're going to add Holiday to our squad.
Yeah, maybe there's
that could happen.
There's a way then to swing Chris Paul over to
again for another draft team,
maybe to the Clippers, possibly. You know, I don't know what Golden State Warriors have for draft picks, and see, that's what I think is going to be the deal breaker here. Is I think Portland's going to want picks, or yep, if you don't have picks, you better have a really good young player. And none of so I don't think off the top of my head any of these contending teams really have desirable young players that mm-hmm. Portland's going to want. You know, maybe I'm missing something here. But I don't think so. So it's going to come down to picks. And, you know, the Celtics are set up well for that. I don't know what the Golden State Warriors situation is there, though, off the top of my head. I know they used to be flush with them, but I don't know. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. The other really funny thing about this, Mike, is that from every – so here's what Golden State, they don't – they have a 2025, so they don't have a 2024, and they have their 2026, but they don't have multiple picks.
So but you, again, can't, you can't trade for back-to-back years.
Yeah, so again –
so the it Celtics, has to be like a 25 and a 28 or something.
Yeah, yeah. So I think the Celtics could include both their 2024s, a bunch of seconds, and I think right there that pretty much trumps up.
Yeah, but if I'm Portland, though, I might poo-poo that and say your 2024 is not worth shit. Yeah, I want like your 20. No, exactly. I would say the Celtics can you give me your 2028 and like your 2030?
Yeah, maybe they grab 2024 or 2028 and a pick swap somewhere.
Like our second rounders. Like I think. And I think that's what Portland did with Milwaukee. They got later yeah. on, thinking
well that because Milwaukee doesn't have any picks either. That was part of the reason why.
Yeah, but there's a good chance Giannis won't be there. Milwaukee's going to suck at that point in time too. I think. I think this is their last run.
I guess you do that, but if I'm Portland, I don't want to wait 5 years to rebuild this either. You know, so that I think there's probably a balance there. It's going to happen fast too, Mike. Training camp opens next week. I think Portland's going to want to have this resolved within the next 2 weeks, certainly before we tip off the regular season. So we're going to know he's going to be somewhere soon. And we always talk about these trade iterations of what they're going to look like. They never end up looking close. Like we think, you know, and especially when you get really good players. There's usually multiple parts, sometimes multiple teams involved. And I expect that to be what happens here. So as we talk about Golden State or Miami not having picks, I said that. Another team coming in and helping them out.
Yeah, and for Portland, too, and then we can move on to something else. I just want to say, too, like they made out great in this trade. To get DeAndre Ayton, too, as part of the deal,
yeah,
when everybody thought, this guy was forcing his way to Miami when all you were going to get back is like Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson, like some worthless draft picks. No, you got back a first team all defensive point guard who you're going to flip for more picks, a center that can kind of restart his career and was the number one pick in the draft. I feel like they hit a grand slam, man.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm kind of, obviously I don't want Milwaukee to get better. You know, that's not helpful to the Celtics. But that whole thing was pissing me off. And just like the exactly. Holland Philly thing, like Dame Lillard, you know, oh, I've been a good, you know, soldier here in Portland. Now you got to trade me where I want. No, you were a good soldier and you got paid $55 million. If you want to be traded, the team's got to get the best deal possible for themselves. And this idea that, you know, the cockiness and arrogance of the Miami Heat and Pat Riley that, you know, we don't even have to include Caleb Martin in the deal to bring over Dame Lillard. because Dame wants to come here. It's like, screw you guys. I'm so glad this didn't happen. Yeah, I really am. Screw them.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like as much as they probably hate each other, Pat Riley and Danny Ainge have similarities as GMs where here's the trade. That's it, folks. I'm not picking up the phone again. Like, here's the offer. I'm not talking to you. And it sounds like that's how it went down with this Lillard trade. It was whatever Riley offered, and I have no idea what it actually was. And then that's it. Like, I'm so cocky and arrogant. Like, I'm the smartest guy in the fucking NBA. I'm Pat fucking Riley. I have heat culture. I don't have to listen to anybody. And, you know, sometimes that blows up in your face. You can get in your own way. I feel like Pat Riley got in his own way. I think at the end, we saw that with Danny. And obviously, Danny Ainge is doing great again in Utah. Like,
I think Danny gets a lot of crap for that. But at the same time, aren't you glad he didn't trade the Tatum and Brown picks? I mean, it's a much different situation to not trade Tatum and Brown picks that were going to be top three than
and his other draft Caleb picks worked Otto. Out. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's like, I don't know. I feel like Danny would have figured out a way to make this work if that was all he had on his roster and they just came this close. And the reality is, with what they're bringing back, they will not get to where they were last year.
I know.
They lost.
Well, we say that, right? We say that about Miami, and then Tyler Halliburton will turn into a better version of Max Strauss. Like, who knows with that fucking franchise? Really, Jim. Like, I'm not counting them out ever again. I do this every year. I count out Miami, even when they're 500 going into the playoffs. I'm not counting them out until they're dead.
Yeah.
I refuse. I feel like if he's good at one thing, that GM down there, if Riley's good at one thing, he found the replacements for the guy, the Vincent and the wing Strauss. He probably has him on his roster already.
We'll see. We'll see. Yeah. I think that's a hell of a dice to roll. Mike, season's about to open up. What are you most excited about? Roster and all that stuff? We can spend the last 2 minutes talking about that, unless you got something else on your mind.
No, I'm excited about the roster. I like the amount of shooting that they have, even though I want them to shoot less threes and I don't like Missoula ball, but, Sam Hauser better be ready to go, baby, because he's got some competition at that wing position. I'll tell you that. So camp battles will be interesting. I really like Brissett. I don't know much about him other than when I watched him play against the Celtics. It was like Michael Jordan out there. So, you know, obviously we're not going to get that, but he seems like a decent player that's going to fill a big void with Grant Williams being gone. I'm excited to see Kristaps Porzingis and Brown and Tatum play together and what that looks like. And I think what the Celtics haven't had in years past is end of the bench ever. And, you know, I always come to the conclusion, well, it really doesn't matter. But this year they do. They have depth. They have 15 guys. They have real NBA players throughout the active roster. Maybe other than Jordan Walsh, which we don't know yet. We'll know once the season starts what he is. But really, they got guys who've played. And, you know, even Lamar Stevens has started games for the Cavs last year. I think their biggest that kid Banton probably hasn't really seen NBA time. But for the most part, they have a real, like, 15 – like, they're close to 15 guys that can all get playing time. And, you know, Luke Kornet will play a lot during the regular season. I enjoy watching him. So I'm excited for this team. I think guys are going to be able to rest this year, and that's important. I feel like last year it was only the bigs that got rest. And this year you'll be able to see Tatum and Brown take nights off, and they'll still be able to win because they have real NBA players backing them up.
Yeah, they definitely loaded up on wings. I think Jordan Walsh's ticket to Maine got punched when Lamar Stevens got signed. I think they're a bit redundant, those two guys. In a way that Steve Matuek and Sam Hauser are a little bit too, and that'd be an interesting battle. So they definitely have guys and more depth, particularly at the wing. The thing that is going to be most interesting to me, and I think it's gotten more interesting now, is just the Malcolm Brogdon situation. From all accounts, it sounds like he's healthy. But from all accounts, it did sound like he was pissed off. And now you have this Drew Holiday trade rumors popping up again. So what's his mindset going into camp? Is this going to be a guy they need to move, even if the Holiday thing does not work out? I think if his head is right, he's a big piece of what they want to do. And, you know, we saw up until, you know, midway through that Miami series, just how dangerous he can be offensively for the Celtics, particularly with his shooting. So that's the most interesting thing to me going into the season, and the piece that I'm just most unsure of. I mean, he hasn't been a Celtic long. We don't have a great history to fall back on and say, oh, Brogdon will be okay. There has been reports in with previous teams that he's been cranky at times. And, you know, his ego gets bruised easily. So I think that's interesting. And then the other thing to me, the second, is how they're going to play. I think we know offensively they're going to continue to shoot a lot of threes, but defensively, they aren't switchable anymore as like they used to be. And that's something I loved, but it doesn't mean they still can't be good defensively. They have incredible length. They have really good athletes. I think we could see some zone. I think we could see hedging the screen more. I think we could see the Celtics just length causing teams fits and problems. So defensively, you know, in the preseason, that's what I'm going to be looking out for, is how they are going to play and what their identity is going to be and scheme is going to be, because I can't imagine it's going to look like what we've been accustomed to with Brad Stevens, and then with Ime on, you know, kind of steroids when he came in here, and the switch and screen scheme that they had. So
yeah,
that's really interesting to me, how they're going to play and, you know, how effective it's going to be and how long, you know, it's going to take to be effective. You don't just implement a new scheme and it immediately works. That never happens. So as Celtics fans, we might need to be patient for 35 games for this thing to be implemented and work correctly. And that's always a fun roller coaster, because as fans, we want immediate gratification, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it'll probably be a good thing if they come out a little sloppy, because last year they came out as like NBA Jam. He's on fire.
And, but with no defense.
We're all like, oh, they're going to break every record in the book. And we were like way off. So, Jim, just to end the pod, I got a question for you. A prediction for next year. How many games does it take for Kyrie Irving to say he wants to be traded out of Dallas?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. I'm done making predictions about Kyrie.
When does he take his vacation? Is it after 20 games?
Here's the only prediction I'll make on that guy, is that it will end bad. I don't know when exactly it will end, but when it ends, it is going to be a fucking train wreck of epic proportions. And that's the only guarantee you have with Kyrie. Everyone's going to go down in flames when he's around. And so it's just a matter of when that is going to happen. Mm. So if you're a Dallas Mavericks fan and you listen to this, you know, strap in. Put your seatbelt on and make sure you have airbags, because it's gonna be one hell of a crash when it finally does crash.
Well, they already saw it last year. They traded for him and then they just sucked. So
wasn't as much his fault, I didn't think. I know we love to blame Kyrie. They sucked before him, and there was a lot of problems. And Luka, I thought, was in really poor shape. I thought he gave middle an effort. A lot of times, I think a lot of Dallas's issues, and people don't like to admit this, last year were on him. We're on Luka Doncic.
All right, Jim.
All right. We'll talk soon. We will be back sooner, Mike. Let's try to do this again in a week. Celtics will open up training camp. We'll hear from Malcolm Brogdon, and we'll hear from the Celtics. So we'll get a pulse anyways. And then, you know, we got a game next Sunday. We got action, Mike. We spent so much time talking about offseason moves and Jrue Holiday and Dame Lillard. We have actual basketball in about 9 days.
Yeah, we do. And I have a feeling we'll be doing a pod sooner than a week because the Celtics will be landing Holiday sooner than that. So we'll talk to you soon, folks.
All right.
See ya.
Bye.